You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
And a good Sunday morning to you. It is time for the College Gridiron 365 Morning After podcast. I'm Brant Parsons with Matt Marshall, two folks that stayed up way too late watching West Coast games, but also started work early in the day, and we're going to talk about everything that touches our fancy on Saturday. Matt, I want to start with the game you were at, and the Florida Gators looking good on offense was Kentucky, but rolling up 45 points, 45-7 win over the Wildcats. Consecutive win number 30 in a row, and the way it looked yesterday, they might run that streak to 60 games in a row. Florida, definitely the dominant team on Saturday. What did you see from your vantage point up there at the Swamp yesterday?
Well, I saw a Florida team that looked, you know, a lot better than we saw them the first game. You know, I think you might chalk that up a little bit to the rust and nerves of, you know, game one. But game two was a lot better. I thought that Jim McElwain and his staff did a better job of attacking Kentucky's defense. We saw Luke Del Rio look a little more comfortable in the pocket. They made a switch on the offensive line, switched out a couple guys, and I think that really kind of benefited them. I think early on, Kentucky was able to get in the backfield and cause a little bit of confusion for Del Rio, and he wasn't really able to find some time on the first drive. But after they made the switch on the offensive line, I think we saw, you know, Florida really get that, you know, really become comfortable as an offense. And what really, you know, was a telling statement was we saw Luke Del Rio on the offense push the ball downfield, big plays. You know, they had a couple big 78-yard touchdown bomb, you know, for, you know, that was kind of something we hadn't, aren't used to seeing from Florida here or there. They only had one play of 70 or more yards last season. So I think the offense looked a little bit more comfortable. I think we saw them, you know, start to develop an identity. Mark Thompson in the backfield, the running back who came in this year, did a great job pushing the ball on the ground. You know, they did almost a four-man rotation at running back offensively, and I think it really helped pound down Kentucky. I think the heat and humidity, too, also wore down the Wildcats. But, you know, from top to bottom, this was an impressive win for the Gators.
Best the Gators have looked since they blew out Ole Miss last year, and you talked about the offense. The defense, we know how good it is, but, I mean, it was stifling, and even the final numbers are, 55 yards passing, but they had 10 yards passing until that garbage time drive that Kentucky scored on. I mean, the defense, we know it's good, but the defense just smothered that Kentucky offense. Even if the offense had been struggling for the Gators, there's no way Kentucky was going to be in this. How much of that is this defense? How much of that is just Kentucky is just not that good?
Well, I think it's a mix on this front. I mean, Kentucky really is not that good. Offensively, you know, they completed more passes to Gator players with interceptions than they did to themselves. Only had 80-some yards going into the middle of the fourth quarter. Didn't get over 100 until a couple big plays towards the end when the defense, I think, kind of was, when they had second and third teamers in to kind of, you know, with the game in hand. Yeah, the defense was impressive. You know, some of that I credit to having Jalen Tabor back. You know, he was missed the first game due to suspension because of that fight on the practice field with one of his teammates. He was back, and I think we saw immediately the impact he has. He was able to get an interception in that game. Florida had three interceptions. That's something they didn't have in week one, you know. So I think when your secondary is able to lock guys down, and it really kind of presents challenges, you know, for the opposing quarterback. I think what that then does is open up the front line and the linebackers to have opportunities, you know, to make some big plays. And we saw that in that game. And I mean, again, impressive performance. The defense was able to shut them down. You know, Kentucky did not look anything at all like an SEC team. And I think these players are really excited about the fact that they opened up the way they did.
Florida has North Texas before they play Tennessee. One more warm-up game until their first big game of the season. UCF was on the road yesterday. A noon kickoff, ABC, in the Big House. Over 100,000 folks there watching the game, looking sharp in their new duds. And they face a Michigan team that is certainly loaded and took advantage of some holes that they found in the UCF special teams. Final score is 51-14. I know you were traveling to Gainesville through part of this game. The thing with the UCF game, they got blown out. I don't know that they got blown out by as much as the score might indicate. They came out, they played well. They had two punts blocked or deflected, two field goals blocked. Michigan really took advantage of the field position in the first half, built up a huge lead. UCF did have the long 87-yard touchdown run, showed a flash of UCF or UC fast. I'm looking at this from the UCF standpoint. You lose 51-14 to the number 5 team in the country, and I don't think you walk out of there with your head down or your tail between your legs, because I don't think that they were blown out maybe as the score would indicate. They're not on a Michigan level, and we didn't expect them to be, but they did show some flashes of what Scott Frost is doing for the Knights, and at least you can take that from the game. I hate moral victories and that whole thing, but I think yesterday we started to see UCF taking that next step of being a faster team and just running into just a buzzsaw right now that Jim Harbaugh has going on in Ann Arbor.
Well, I think I agree with you. I think what we're seeing here is, you know, Scott Frost is building a foundation, you know, for his program at UCF, and I think this was just one of the building blocks to this foundation, because I think you have to go on the road, you have to go, you know, in hostile environment, over 100,000 fans, you know, at the Big House. You have to go in there and you bring your team in there and you try to do the best you can, hoping, you know, maybe to come out with a win there. Again, like you mentioned, he just walked into a buzzsaw, really, honestly, with a Michigan team that's playing really well right now with Jim Harbaugh. Defensively was, you know, outstanding. UCF had to pretty much play a perfect game, I thought, to beat Michigan. They weren't able to do that. They made too many special team mistakes, which is something that UCF is going to work on. But I was impressed. I mean, there's some things about UCF's performance that impressed me a little bit. You know, I mean, obviously they're making some strides. The biggest concern I have right now, though, is the quarterback position. I mean, you look at what, you know, Justin Holman went down with, it looks like a hamstring injury. You know, they need to get improvement out of that quarterback position, because as we saw, what Oregon was able to do under Scott Frost as offensive coordinator is it's so key to have that quarterback position, that guy who can make the plays, who can lead the offense, who can go out there and make sure everything runs, you know, almost like clockwork. And I think right now they're struggling a little bit on that. This team is much better than they were last year. Let's put that out forward as well. And I think defensively is where we're starting to see some of those strides as well. They're making big pushes on that. You know, it's tough because you had a disappointing loss to a Michigan team, and you could take, like you said, moral victory from it, whatever. But you got to bounce back this week because you're going to face a Maryland team that's put up almost 100 points, another Big Ten opponent, and is eager to come into UCF and get an opportunity, you know, for a win. So if you're Scott Frost, you know, there isn't going to be time to sit around and pat yourselves on the back and say this is great. You've got to keep moving forward. Again, it's another piece of that building block for that foundation that you hope to have, that in the next couple of years you will be able to compete with the teams like the Michigans.
And Scott Frost has reiterated he is not going to say anything about injuries. We do not know how serious the injury to Justin Holman is. He had some plays in the first half with a healthy Holman. He rushed a few big scrambles and completed some passes. They had drives get down in the field goal range, only to be to have the field goal blocked and such. And I vote one thing else from this game. After watching the Clemson punt returner drop the ball in the 1 yard line, let's institute, instead of that as a celebration, Adrian Killens, the lean across the tape as you cross the goal line. After he ran the 87-yard touchdown run, how about we start that as a new college football celebration trademark? Instead of dropping the ball before you get across the line, just carry the ball, lean across. That was a nice little touch.
And I mean, one of the things that you talked about offensively and Killings, I mean, one of the things that impressed me is you look at the rushing attack by UCF. We would expect that. That's kind of what Oregon was known for. I mean, UCF right now, you know, almost close to 500 yards rushing on the season, a 4.67 average. I mean, that's pretty good, you know what I mean, for when you consider what they looked like last year. They couldn't run the ball at all last year. Now you're seeing this UCF team, you know, able to get that running attack going. And I like the fact that Scott Frost used some wrinkles in the offense. I think we expected that a little bit more than we saw last year. I think we'll see it more as we move in from, you know, from game to game. So to me, that's a good sign. It shows the offensive line is doing what they're supposed to do. Again, they just have their young program, I think, so to speak, under Scott Frost, and I think they just have some areas of concern they need to work on.
Number 3 Florida State hosted Charleston Southern with a noon game, and at least in the game standpoint, they did the question I had, and that was to not come out lethargic and tired. Granted, it probably helped that Charleston Southern had 32 players suspended for this game, but Florida State takes care of business 52-8. They were up 28-0 after the first quarter. The game was never in doubt. Some injuries in this game. Derwin James left the game with an apparent knee injury. Some other guys banged up. So from the standpoint of the win, FSU got what they needed. They look good doing it. But with Louisville coming up Saturday, huge game already of the season for Florida State. You hope that those injuries are not too serious, because they're going to need every one of those guys on that defense going up against Lamar Jackson and the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I think one of the things that had to be scary is, you know, you watch what Lamar Jackson was able to do against Syracuse Friday night. So you're Florida State. You go into this game. You know you're going to win the game pretty much, you know, but now you had to focus on, you know, you don't want to look too far ahead. And then, like you mentioned, you get these injuries. Derwin James goes out. You have a couple of banged up and bruised. This is you know, Ole Miss was a big test. This is going to be a big test for Florida State. It's even more important because it's an in-conference game and it's an in-divisional game as well. So, you know, it presents such a huge challenge. Lamar Jackson, very similar to what I think, like a Deshaun Watson at Clemson. You know, really much, you know, a mobile quarterback, a quarterback with a strong arm, able to make some plays. And I think we're going to be able to see that a little bit in this game. But Florida State's defense is no slouch. And we saw what they were able to do against Ole Miss. If they get that kind of penetration, if they can force mistakes. And that's something I think Jimbo Fisher's team does. Florida State leads the ACC in, you know, turnovers margin right now. You know, they forced 7 turnovers in the first 2 games. They're going to have to do that against Louisville. They're going to have to help them make mistakes, because this is a Louisville team that does not make mistakes, or makes lots of mistakes, I'm sorry, and makes lots of, boneheaded plays. So, you know, Florida State gets the win, looks impressive. Even more importantly, DeAndre Francois kind of takes that next step as a development as a quarterback.
And how big is Saturday's game? ESPN Game Day. Heading to Louisville for that one. Let's look across the country now. We talked heading into the weekend. It was a weekend of top 25 teams not playing each other. No marquee games, really, you know, huge marquee games. And for the most part, I think it played to form. Most of those top 25 teams won easily, won big, scored a lot of points. But there were a few games that we're going to talk about involving some of those top 25 teams. And we got to start with the first one. Really, the story, I think, of the day. Central Michigan stunning number 22 Oklahoma State with a crazy finish. Cooper Rush, the quarterback for the Chippewas, had a pretty good day for Central Michigan with 4 touchdowns. So it wasn't just the final play. He kept them in this game. But Oklahoma, if you don't know the story, turn on and watch it. But Oklahoma State has the ball, 4 seconds left. They run out the clock by throwing the ball away. They are flagged on the play for intentional grounding. The refs mess up the call. They know it's a loss of down penalty, so they give the ball to Central Michigan with an untimed down. And then really, if the refs didn't mess up, the final play was just pretty incredible with the heave downfield, the catch, and the pitch back, and the guy runs the length of the field to outrace Oklahoma State defenders to get into the end zone. Central Michigan wins, and then like an hour later, the MAC officials come out and say, oh yeah, oops, our guys messed that up. That shouldn't have happened. But they can't fix it. And Matt, it's such a tough area. You look at it, you say, well, the game was supposed to be over, so that last play never should have happened. Why can't we fix that? Why can't you just say, you know what? That play didn't happen. We were wrong, but they, you know, if it happens on the field and then they declare it a final, they don't go back and they don't fix these things. We've seen this a few times in college football, and right or wrong, Oklahoma State now has a loss, a non-conference loss to a MAC team because of the determination of that officiating crew right there on the field.
Yeah, you know, when you look at it, it's just you know, it is what it is, and unfortunately, life isn't fair. I know that doesn't help out Oklahoma State fans, but, you know, I saw, you know, an hour after, you know, the officials came out and said, you know, we blew it, we blew the play, We shouldn't have let that happen. You know, when the replay officials said we should have been able to stop it and, you know, make the proper decision. It didn't happen. You know, fans were claiming, well, why can't they just forfeit? You know, why can't the NCAA make, you know, the Central Michigan forfeit the game and, you know, gives it to, you know, Oklahoma State? That's just not the way the world works, you know what I mean? And I don't think the NCAA wants to go down that road, because the moment you start stepping in, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours after that kind of situation and do that kind of thing, I think you're really, you're going down a really kind of promiscuous path, you know. I mean, you don't want to get to the point where you're making these decisions, you know, hours or days later that can really kind of affect, you know, a team's chances. I mean, you know, listen, I don't think Central Michigan's got a chance of getting in the college football playoff, but Oklahoma State probably could have, you know what I mean? And if you're going to start doing that, you know, when does that become an issue when you're the college football playoff selection committee? When do you start looking at things and saying, well, okay, well, that game was a forfeiture, so now how do we, you know, judge that against, you know, everyone else? I think it's mistakes happen, and we've seen that. One of the things I'd like to see from this moment, like we saw last year with Miami and Duke with that crazy finish, you know, they came back to win the game, I want to see them where they move forward from this. How can we prevent this from kind of thing from ever happening again? I think that's why conferences like the ACC, the SEC, you know, went to this whole idea of collaborative replay, because they wanted to be able to stop games, have plays like this, go to the replay booth, have someone in a centralized office sit down and look at the play and say, no, this isn't right. I think if they'd had that, I think they would have, this game would have gone for Oklahoma State and would have been a, you know, would have been a win for Oklahoma State. I don't think that, you know, because they didn't at the moment, it kind of changed things up, and that obviously it made a crazy play. But as you know, Mike Gundy, you know, kind of, you know, implied at the end of the game too, you know, they shouldn't have been in that situation to begin with. You know, I mean, if you're good, you know, you shouldn't be to the point where it takes a crazy play to beat you like that. So either way you look at it, it's a crazy moment. Replay obviously needs to be a bigger factor in this. You shouldn't have these kind of things happen. We shouldn't be talking about it a day later. You know, I mean, this should be the play on the field, not something that happened with you know, something that had to do with an instant replay movement.
And to further your point, there are mistakes in every game. They don't always happen on the last play. But if we were to retroactively change outcome of this game, then can you retroactively go back and say, you know what, that shouldn't have been a touchdown because this play was blown? So you can't do that. And I agree with you. I think maybe the change on this needs to be how it is handled by the conferences and the replay and being able to have someone explain to them what's going on, because obviously they didn't realize that bylaw in the laws, you know, deep down in the rule book, to know how to handle that. Another game in the Big 12 yesterday. I listened to this game driving home from the office and was just fascinating. And it was Arkansas 41, number 15, TCU 38, back and forth. Hogs were up 13 late in the game. They missed a field goal. TCU comes back, scores 21 straight points, takes the lead. They're up by 8. Arkansas drives down. They score a touchdown. They get the 2-point conversion on a pass back to the quarterback. Then TCU gets a big kick return. Then they get their field goal blocked as regulation is running out. And then they go into OT, takes two of them to settle it. Arkansas gets the win. Brett Bielema, a huge win for the Razorbacks. And basing off this game, there's two topics. The return of the SEC, just like we predicted. They didn't lose a single non-conference game this week. And other than Georgia, looked good doing it. And the Big 12, are they in trouble now? If you look as the top Big 12 teams keep losing all these non-conference games. Let's start with the SEC, though, because we did harp on them last week. And Matt, you and I, we joked about it and said, you know, they're going to have a great week and everybody's going to forget about this first week. And really, that kind of happened. Alabama rolled, and Tennessee with a huge win over Virginia Tech in the battle at Bristol. And then you have Arkansas pulling off this win on ESPN against TCU. It was the day that you could hope for if you were SEC fans or SEC workers to bounce back from that first week with an impressive week 2, just like I think most people may have suspected was possible.
Yeah, and I mean, you and I talked about this in our podcast. We talked about it on our show last week, College Football Now. You know, it's 1 week. You know, 1 week, and then you look to see what happens the next week. And I think, obviously, the SEC had a really bad opening weekend, not what they had wanted to see happen. And then you look what happens. They bounce back and go better. I think, honestly, the league that's in the most trouble is the Big 12. It's not just because, you know, they went 4-5 this weekend. It's because their top teams now have losses. You look at Oklahoma. Oklahoma has a loss. Oklahoma State now has a loss. TCU now has a loss. Baylor is the only team right now that doesn't have a loss. Honestly,
And Texas.
So honestly, if you're looking at it now, I think, you know, it's Baylor and Texas really are the best chances for the Big 12 to get in, you know, have a team in the college football playoff. So now you're looking at all of this swirlingness about expansion and what are we going to do and everything and trying to do this to get teams in the playoff. I mean, does it push that up more because, you know, now the Big 12 is going to struggle a little bit. You know, do they have enough to get in with, will a one-loss Big 12 team find their way into the playoff situation? I think of all those teams, I think Oklahoma has the best chance with one loss because, again, they play Ohio State this week. You know, if they beat an Ohio State team that's probably going to be ranked in the top three, you know, maybe that helps push them back up, you know what I mean, and gets them into position maybe where they're going to be there. I don't know. I mean, you know, yes, the SEC had a rough week, but, you know, Alabama didn't lose, you know, and you know, they still had their top team still available. For the Big 12 to lose out Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and TCU, that's a lot. I think to me, that's a bigger, that really hurts them more than the SEC having that 7-7 opening weekend.
And I talked about the top 25 and how most things went to form on that. But two games I want to talk about. Number 9, Georgia, barely beats Nichols 26-24. They were actually outscored at home 10-0 in the fourth quarter, able to pull that one off. And number 2, Clemson, struggling again, barely beating Troy 30-24. Georgia, you can maybe knock some of that up to noon start, coming off the win over North Carolina, but they did not look impressive. Clemson, again, an early start coming off the Auburn game, but that's the second week in a row that Clemson has been less than impressive out there. They're a team that's ranked number 2 in the country. They're the team we had number 1 heading into the season. Deshaun Watson, the guy that everybody has penciled in as at least going to New York for the Heisman Trophy presentation this week. Is there time to start wondering what's going on in Clemson? You certainly can't. You wouldn't have expected the start from the Tigers. 2 games now where they've only won by 6 points against non-ranked, well, you know, a non-ranked SEC foe, and against Troy on Saturday.
Well, I think it is time to look to worry a little bit about Clemson. I mean, you they haven't looked anything near. You know, you could maybe take that week one. They faced an Auburn team, which is a much improved defense, was able to kind of do some things that maybe Clemson wasn't, you know, looking forward to. But then to have the week two, you know, struggles as well, you know, there's got to be a little bit of concern there, especially when you consider how much offensive firepower they have back for this year and how much, you know, you like you mentioned, Deshaun Watson, you've got 3 star receivers, you've got Wayne Gallman at running back, you know, you've got an offensive line that's had some holes, but you don't expect them to struggle as much as they have been, you know, scoring points. I think part of their concern is they're at the bottom of the ACC, towards the bottom of the ACC, in third down conversions. I think they're struggling on those third downs. I think they need to do a better job of that as well. You know, defensively, I think they're having some issues. You know, they don't seem to be anywhere near as strong as they were, and we kind of expect that a little bit. They lost a lot of talent to the NFL. But again, to still be, you know, to have the struggles they're having, you know, you hope they kind of correct them. And you can tell already because Deshaun Watson kind of, you know, fired back at the media saying, well, you know, the media wants us to score, you know, 50, 60 points a game. Well, it's not just the media, Deshaun. I mean, you're going to have, you know, the fans want this, you know. I mean, your coach probably wants this, you know. I mean, you can't just kind of slide by these games, especially when you look around at the ACC and you look at teams like Florida State and you look at a Louisville and you're seeing some of these opponents that eventually are one of these times, if you don't play up to that potential, someone's going to come out and beat you, and that could be devastating for them, especially if they're looking forward to getting into college football play.
Before we wrap it up, a few games worth mentioning. Pittsburgh, Penn State. This was a fun game at noon. It was on TV2 at the office, along with the UCF game. James Conner, a touchdown rushing. What a great story there for Pitt. The Panthers, 341 yards rushing. Penn State did okay with their running back, with Saquon Barkley scoring four touchdowns. But if you're watching, I mean, talking about the ACC, but if you're watching from a Big Ten standpoint, Penn State's defense, that line just not real strong. You have to be wondering if the hot seat for James Franklin is, or the seat's going to start to get hot there for him at Penn State. And Pittsburgh showing, as you just kind of mentioned, a little bit even more depth in the ACC of quality teams out there. This was a good win for Pittsburgh in a huge rivalry game. The largest crowd to ever watch a sporting event in the city of Pittsburgh happened yesterday in this game.
Yeah, and it was, and again, I think you've seen what Pat Narduzzi, you know, talked about young coaches who come in and energize their programs. He's been a great influence on this Pittsburgh program. You know, they went through a period of 2 or 3 years where we saw, you know, countless number of coaching changes, you know, back and forth, and ADs moving on, and Narduzzi has seemed to solidify and stabilize that program, and you're seeing they're making great strides. Scott Barnes, the new athletic director, is making great strides in helping, you know, improve their facilities, helping improve everything that's going on with that program, and you saw it yesterday. A huge win for Pitt, you know, again, to win that game in the state of Pittsburgh. It helps with recruiting, it helps with your brand identity. This Pittsburgh team is a team to watch out for. I mean, we talked about the Atlantic, you know, with Clemson, Florida State, and Louisville, but you look at that Coastal and you see Pittsburgh and you see North Carolina and you see Miami and, you know, you see Virginia Tech a little bit in there as well. I think Pittsburgh's got to be a team to be considered as a force in that Coastal, possibly making a push to get in the championship game.
The other game I was going to talk about was Utah beating BYU. It was 20-19, a sloppy game, six turnovers. The story of this game, BYU on the road going for two with 10 seconds left after scoring a touchdown. An extra point would have tied it, sent to overtime. They did not convert. But then I stayed up late, and I know you stayed up late too, and there was some fascinating stuff going on late last night. Grambling State had a 21-3 lead at halftime over Arizona. Wildcats straightened it out, came back in the second half, won 31-21. Boise State holds on to beat Washington State 31-28 in a thrilling game at the end. Cal loses to San Diego State. Maybe these late games are keeping us from talking about some of the losses that the Pac-12 suffered yesterday. But the story for me that maybe not too many people know about, Arizona State, Texas Tech, Kalen Ballage, 8 touchdowns, ties an FBS record, 7 touchdowns rushing, another one receiving, some of those from the Wildcat formation, but 8 touchdowns. One, just the fact that he scored 8 touchdowns, and two, Texas Tech's defense to allow 8 touchdowns to one guy. There were times, and I got to tell you, man, I'm laying on the couch. It's been a long day. I was in the office at 11:30. It's now, you know, 1:15 in the morning. It's been a long working day, and I'm half asleep. I'm thinking, you know what? I think I could run for a touchdown against this Texas Tech defense. They did not want to tackle or know how to tackle, but just a crazy performance out there in some of those late games, with Kalen Ballage being at least one of the more noteworthy things. But it's not often we get that many exciting things going on in the wee hours of the night, but certainly, Matt, some fun stuff happening way late last night here on the East Coast.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, some of that Pac-12, what do they refer to it now, Pac-12 after dark games, you know, some surprises. You know, Washington State, you know, they lost to Boise State. They're 0-2. This was a team that's coming off a 9-win season, coming off, you know, a big bowl win over Miami. I think a lot of people expected Washington State to be a top 25 team. This is going to be the start of something good for Mike Leach. Now they're 0-2. They suffered that first week loss against Eastern Washington. You know, they go into Idaho this week, so they should get their first win. But even then, their schedule gets so much tougher. They face Oregon, at Stanford, UCLA. I think Washington State's in some serious trouble. You mentioned Arizona State. Great win. Arizona State's offense looks something, you know, looks like they actually have a high-scoring offense. They've scored over 122 points so far in the first two games. They've got kind of an easy path. I mean, you know, they're 2-0. They face UTSA next week. They got California, and then they got that at USC game. So they could start out easily 4-0 going in there. The Pac-12 South, once again, looking like a division that's to be reckoned with UCLA, USC, Utah, Arizona State, and even, imagine this, Brent, Colorado. Colorado 2-0, although against wins against Colorado State and Idaho State. They go face Michigan this week. I think that streak ends this week. So, but
Colorado 2-0 with a lot of points.
Yeah, with a lot of points. This offense, Mike McIntyre, I think, was feeling a little pressure coming into the season. Had to do something special. They're putting up a lot of points, so they're going to go into. They're going to head up to the Big House, to Michigan, and see what they can do against, you know, Jim Harbaugh. But then they go to Oregon after that as well. So a tough stretch for them, but looking impressive. So the Pac-12 South once again looking like a division. I wouldn't say necessarily is. Comparable to the SEC West, but I guess this season, I guess you could say that, but definitely a strong division in one of the Power 5 conferences.
And at least as competitive. Matt, it's Sunday morning, and you have writing to do, and I have professional football to ignore today. But we'll get in this week, but I looked ahead, and week three, it's pretty big. There's a lot of games this week that are going to pique our interest, and we're going to have some huge matchups to talk about. So we survived week two. We ended up getting a couple upsets out of it, a couple of good games. But week three, it's back. The huge games are looming on the horizon, and we'll be able to talk about those on our show on Wednesday and our podcast on Thursday. So, but we're not going to look ahead yet. Let's enjoy our Sunday of looking. I know you're looking back on some of your writing today, but just to note, week three promises to rival maybe week one in some of the games that are out there.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's the best part about college football is when you have these weeks. Week two, we went into this past week, and we thought, oh, this is such a dud of a week. You know, it's going to be Snoozeville, and it turned out to be a really great week. You know, I think better than most people would have thought it would be. After that, such a tremendous opening weekend, and now you're mentioning that have a strong week three. What a great way to start this college football season. Lots of drama and lots of storylines moving ahead, and we're not even into conference play in most cases.
Yep, it's always a good weekend when you're watching college football. Matt, thanks for waking up this Sunday morning and looking back on week two. For Matt Mershon, Brent Parsons, subscribe. Rate us on iTunes, tell a friend, share our podcast to everybody that you know, and thanks for listening. We will be back our live show from the office on Wednesday. You can follow that on Facebook Live also, and then later in the week we'll have our preview podcast right here. For Matt Michelle, I'm Brent Parsons. Thanks for listening. College Gridiron Live Podcast, College Gridiron 365 Podcast. I always forget we have so many different names. Brought to you by OrlandoSentinel.com.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Mershell. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.